Well, I wrote White Privilege Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack back in 1989, and I've been doing a good deal of work on privilege systems ever since then.
And what life experience is it that led you to write the first book in 1989?
I wrote the first paper on white privilege in 1986. My own colleagues refused to publish it, saying it had no footnotes. But gradually over the next 2 years, they agreed to publish it because I told them Freud had no footnotes. This is original work. And it came from my experience with men who were very nice, but who said offensive things, oppressive things about women in seminars that I was holding for a 7-year period on how to bring materials on women into the liberal arts curriculum. And these very nice men would say insulting things to us without knowing it, without realizing how insulting they were. So when the women raised the question, can't we get these materials on women into the freshman courses instead of waiting? One man said 1 year, when you're laying the foundation blocks for knowledge in those freshman courses, you can't put in soft stuff. And he'd been reading lots of hardback books and refereed journal articles on women. But he tipped his hand in a way that was useful. We women saw that he considered all of this still to be soft. Then, a couple of years later, another very nice man was asked the same question by the women. Can't we get these materials on women in closer to the beginning of the student's experience, freshman year? And he said, in a kind and explanatory way, he said, that first year the students are trying to choose their major. Their major is their discipline. And if you want a student to think in a disciplined way, you can't put in extras. Now, everybody in the world is born of a woman. I was wondering how we became so extra to the mind of this man, because he was very nice. And I went back and forth in my head trying to decide, are these nice men or are they oppressive men? And I thought I had to choose back in those days, 1985, 86. And then it came into my mind that actually black women in the Boston area had written that white women are oppressive to work with. Not just some white women, but white women. And I realized there was a kind of sickening parallel here. And I decided niceness had nothing to do with it. These were nice men, but they had been taught and had internalized the view that knowledge is male and men are knowers. Why? Well, because all the books they were reading had been mostly by and about men. And men ran the big university presses and the research universities and kept making more and more knowledge. And men did seem to be the holders of knowledge. But I realized in a sickening way, if I looked laterally, I had been a very good student of what I had been taught, which was that knowledge is white. I had been taught knowledge is white and whites are knowers. We ran the big universities, the university presses, the books were by and about whites in general. And I hated seeing this parallel because I knew the men had an unearned advantage with regard to filling the curriculum with their versions of what knowledge is. But now I saw that whites had been filling the curriculum. We white people had been filling the curriculum with works by and about our experience. And this meant we had an unearned advantage with regard to the whole knowledge system. And then I realized I could get grants for my work not just because I wrote good grant proposals, but because I was white and the funders were white. And there was a system here of unearned advantage that was being kept in place. A whole structure was being kept in place. And I asked myself, what else do I have that my African-American colleagues don't have in the way of access to power through grants? The answers came up to me in the middle of the night, mostly. 46 came up over 3 months. And that is the famous list that went into the short article, White Privilege Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. Now, that answer is much too long. The question you asked me is much too complicated to be answered in a short way. I described a process of coming to realize how I got unearned advantage, but mistook it for my own merit, you know, thought I had earned it all. Because this is a story of learning about white privilege through first understanding male privilege. Editors almost always make the mistake of thinking that I spoke for all white people when in fact I was writing autobiographically. My list of examples is about my experience, not other people's experience. I was not writing about all white people everywhere. I was writing about things I realized about conditions of my existence at my workplace, by contrast with the existences of my African-American colleagues. So my work is almost always misrepresented as being universal, and it isn't. It's autobiographical, and I recommend that everybody, once they grasp the idea of unearned advantage, make their own lists. Maybe with regard to class or region or religion or place in the birth order or body type. All kinds of things can set you ahead in life through no virtue of your own. And that's what I study. But of course, it's necessary to study the many things in life that can set you behind arbitrarily through circumstances beyond your control, that shouldn't make you feel shamed or blamed or guilty, but do definitely have a bearing on your life.
And the thing that's touching about your story that you shared is that you were feeling really oppressed by your male colleagues, and then in kind of digging into that, it sounds like you were drawing this other parallel about other people, right?
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes people are afraid to make that connection. They're afraid to think about racial injustice and gender injustice. And I really appreciate that you look at them in tandem. What advice would you have to people about that?
I think it's good to keep in mind that everybody you know, and you also, whoever you are, have a combination of unearned disadvantages and unearned advantages. But it's important to look at these systemic things that came with us into the world with our births, and we didn't ask for them. This is not about blame, shame, or guilt, but learning to see systemically about the way one was placed in society. This is studying what Adrienne Rich, the poet, called the politics of location.
What year were you born?
1934.
So a lot of people in your age range, white people, are not so progressive in their way of thinking. So what was it in your life experience that really made you look at how complicated these issues were, racial injustice, gender injustice?
Well, I think I followed my own train of thought till I realized that niceness has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I followed my own train of thought when I saw recurrent patterns of what I would now call oppression. But as a child, I just often thought, this isn't fair. That isn't fair. Why is this happening? And why won't the grown-ups talk about it?
What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned on your journey as an educator, as a writer, as somebody who's taken up really difficult topics?
What I have learned is, when I follow my own train of thought, paradoxically, though it's very personal, that's when I become useful to other people. I have a lot of trouble writing. And while I'm writing, I feel rather crazy because I'm usually writing things that I haven't read anywhere else or heard anywhere else. And as I write and feel crazy. It turns out later that after my snail's pace of writing, what I have put on the page has a usefulness to other people. This is very moving to me. I never expected to be useful through writing or through the programs like Seed that I helped to start. But it's very gratifying to find that when I go deeply into what I think I've observed, to the point where I think I'm writing like an eccentric, that's when other people say what I've written relates to their own experience. It's not the same as their experience, but they relate to what I've said. That is a very gratifying mystery. Why should I be most useful when I'm most personal?
What is the most important change you've witnessed over the years from doing the work you've done?
Well, I think when women got access to birth control, then we weren't being forced to have babies all the time. And that has been very useful to our development. And I'm sorry to say there are people in politics who are bound and determined to try to reverse that trend of freedom.
What are you hoping for during primaries and election season and all of that?
I hope that common sense revisits the electorate. I hope that the schooling people had in some sort of critical thinking will get restored before it's too late.
And are you hopeful that this generation of students that's here at NCORE will bring about positive change in the future based on what you've seen so far?
I have high hopes for this whole group of young people and middle-aged people who come to NCORE.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.